This is December 19th, 2010. And with Christmas just around the corner, I'm going to talk about a very key element of Buddhist teaching, which is giving or generosity, what in Sanskrit is called dana, D-A-N-A. It's not the first time I've talked about this in Taisho, but I think I can bring some new points to it this morning, and especially the problem, the potential problem of receiving, and it can be a problem. It's, of course, all interwoven with giving. Dana is the first of what we call the six paramitas, the six perfections. And these perfections are what develop in us through practice, and also what, if when we cultivate these, we develop in practice. So it's both the cause and effect of developing in our practice, and developing as human beings, becoming more whole. Dana is often called the most important of the six paramitas because it sort of underpins everything else, and we'll get to that in just a minute. Just to run through some of the main points that Buddhist texts present about dana. By the way, it can be other synonyms for dana are, besides giving and generosity, are charity, benevolence, and beneficence. Dana can be understood in terms of to whom a gift is given. Friends and relatives would be one category. The poor, the sick, the afflicted, the helpless is another category. And the third that is traditionally mentioned is giving to the Sangha. And according to an old text, this is called giving to the Sangha is the field of merit par excellence. And this comes from the ancient belief that that the merit accrued by giving to the Sangha or to anyone is determined by the worthiness of the recipient. A second way to understand dana is what can be given away. The obvious thing at this time of year is material things. But other more important things are mentioned in the text. One is fearlessness, giving fearlessness, reassuring, helping people settle their hearts and their minds, giving education, teaching has been called by many people the noblest profession. It's taking quite a beating these days in the schools, but it still is an absolutely wonderful form of giving. Giving of life and limbs, it's something that few of us ever have to countenance. Giving of merit, we actually do this in our 10 directions, 3 worlds, all Buddhas, Bodhisattva, Mahasattvas. We now return the merit of our chanting to. It's a even though it may not mean much to people when they chant this, it is a ritualized way of reminding ourselves to that we can relinquish the merit of what of our practice. And we are no the less for relinquishing it. the ultimate form of a gift has always been considered the Dharma itself. And there's so many ways of giving the Dharma besides just instructing people and sitting and Buddhist doctrine. And giving isn't always pleasant. That is, giving the Dharma is always not received, is not always welcome, because a teacher's generosity, or in old terms they would say a bodhisattva's generosity, may be harsh, because the teacher gives what he or she believes the student needs rather than what the student may want. Something a teacher has to face all the time in Doksan, when rejecting the answers of a student or correcting a student. It'd be less generous to always go for a way to please the student and to make the student feel affirmed in his or herself. It's much more of a kind of a sacrifice to deliver what the student needs rather than what she or he may want. There's the issue of how one gives, and there is also the issue of why or with what motives one gives. And anyone here would know that the motives can be dubious. The spirit behind the giving can be less valuable or more so. The Buddha outlined many ways of giving with mixed motives. Giving out of fear, giving in accordance, simply in accordance with tradition, as a kind of a ritual. Of course, giving with the expectation of something in return, something to gain, or giving in order to acquire a favorable reputation, or even a favorable rebirth. I think this is much more common in Asia, where wealthy people may build temples and be very generous, with very, very accepted, socially approved motive of acquiring merit for their next life or lives. So it's in that respect, it becomes kind of an exchange, a kind of a transaction. All right, I'll give you $1 million for a temple, or a wing, or a room of a temple, and I'm expecting that you'll pass this on to Yamaraja, the mythical lord of the death, so that he'll give me credit for that when I pass away. And the Buddha also talked about giving in order to adorn our mind. I suppose what that could mean is just to appear to others and to oneself as being more beautiful in our generosity. Well, who is entirely free of these things? I don't know of anyone who could say for certainty, and I include myself, who has absolutely no trace of any of these things when giving. So we don't need to wait until we think that we're as pure as the driven snow in order to give things. But as a practice point, to try to notice, try to be aware when our giving is stained with these ulterior motives, that itself, just the noticing, the awareness is huge. At least then we won't think that we're such excellent people, quite such excellent people through our giving, if we recognize that we're getting something in return for it. The Buddha also said, if you knew, as I know, the benefit of generosity, you would not let an opportunity go by without sharing. One of the fundamental benefits that the Buddha surely was referring to is just how giving helps us. It's kind of an antidote to our deep-seated tendencies toward greed and clinging and self-centeredness. It's not going to wipe out those tendencies for sure, because they are so deeply ingrained, but it helps. It's a practice in itself. It's a practice. We give, and maybe it hurts. It is hard. Maybe even we regret it. But it seems that the more we can get ourselves to do that, the more we realize, we come to experience that we're not losing anything essential to us through our generosity. I read that the Tibetans have a practice where they start with a very common object like a potato or something like that, and they pass it, one person passes it from one hand to the other, back and forth, this potato, as a way to just sort of exercise our muscles of letting go. And then they move up to something more valuable and pass that back and forth from hand to hand. I can't vouch for this practice, but it's interesting that it is a practice, an established practice there, at least among some Tibetan Buddhists. I think it reminds me of making offerings at the altar to a Buddha figure or a Buddha image. These are ways of embodying giving, letting go, having it, working it through the body, our hands and our arms. It's one of the things that's most puzzling to newcomers, what the fruit and the flowers and are doing on the altar. And it's not easy to satisfy people, give a satisfactory explanation, because it's more in the doing of it that you come to appreciate the value of it. It's one thing to just think generous thoughts. It's another thing to actually get the body involved by physically placing something on an altar or even passing something from one hand to the next. What is it about giving that is satisfying to the degree that it is? What about it satisfies us? Well, I think fundamentally it's because in giving we're living in harmony with our true nature. It is our nature to give and receive, and the two always go together. People who have to always be the giver, and we know people like this, often it's wealthy people, but it's not always. It can be people with much more modest means who have to pick up the check in the restaurant, or they have to be the one to do the giving, and they're very uncomfortable when it's reciprocated or shared. Well, that's another form of ego involvement in it. I think a form of control. I think one common version of this is when parents have to continue, when they insist on giving in these various ways with their adult children. It's a form of an assertion of the ranking or the power. But the nature of life is exchange. It's interconnection. The breath, the breathing, is just one form of this. There's no such thing as only exhaling. There's always, or only inhaling. It's always has to be doing both. This came to me a long time ago at Highland Park when I was wandering through the lilac bushes in May and snorting the lilac fragrance and realizing that I couldn't just keep taking it in. So this is the nature of, not just true nature, it sounds maybe too personal, it's the nature of things, is exchange, giving and receiving. Yes, giving may boost our self-esteem. That's another reason it can be a nice feeling to give, but that's not anything important in spiritual terms. But it confirms this fundamental exchange, this give and take that is life. And so for that reason, it's important to be able to know how to receive. Not be afraid to receive. There's a kind of vulnerability, faint, maybe very faint, but there's a kind of a vulnerability, an opening that we have to experience, that we do experience when we're receiving something. If someone gives you something and you're disappointed or insulted, but that's something pretty uncommon, but if you're disappointed, how do you respond? It's important, of course, who am I telling this to? It's important to recognize what's behind the gift and not get too caught up in what it is. And really to be mindful at that moment, to see through the object, to see through it and see what's behind it. And not to look too hard. Of course, people give for all kinds of reasons as we just said. But there it is. There's the handing, the giving, right there. Can we just relax and accept it, and with gratitude? That's the challenge in practice. I've been given things that I would. Don't know what to do with. I don't really have any use for the thing, but I find, I don't know, maybe this is not the best thing to do, but I always want to keep it for a while at least, because of the spirit in which it was given. I'm not talking about silly gag gifts. when I was in Japan, I was soliciting advice on what I might give the Roshi, one of the teachers I trained with there, and his attendant assistant, who was an American, said, "Well, I assume you know not that he doesn't like being given stupid, silly little gag gifts." But I don't mean those. I mean some where someone thinks that it's something you would use or want, and they're off the mark. I hold on to those things for a while, and then I run across them in a drawer or something. It's just a reminder that of that person and their spirit of giving. And then eventually, you can't let those things build up too much. You have to flush them out. But and by the way, no better time to clean up the clutter than right as the year is ending and we're about to begin the new year. To accept something simply, just directly, and watch out for overdoing it with the gratitude. This I see this, hear this, or here or there all the time. I don't mean at the center so much, but at other places where someone gives a gift. They don't know how transparent that is. It's just too much. No one says that, you know, more volume means more gratitude. Just, I think people are more sensitive. But the givers are more sensitive to that. They just a appreciative, direct thank you can be so much more than all that hysteria that has become so, I hear so much. And the giver too has to be aware of when you're going for, you're too attached to the success of the gift. That you're really setting yourself up for pain if you've got too much invested in what you're giving to someone, too much invested in their being loving your gift. Because you put pressure on the recipient when you come with eyes wide with expectation. I once heard that the Inuit, what we used to call Eskimos, that when they receive a gift, they turn their back to the giver, so as not to feel, so the receiver feels no pressure in how they register their receiving the gift. I don't know if that's true, but it makes sense. I've always heard that the Japanese. It is their custom not to open a gift in front of a person for the same reason, so everyone can just chill out about, you know, whether it's the perfect gift or not. And Gandhi was once asked how he could be so generous with his time and all of his effort at peace. And he said, "I don't give to anyone. I do it all for myself." I found an article in an old Tricycle about giving, in which the author, Marcia Rose, who at the time at least was a teacher in Taos, New Mexico, she said the following: mindful attention can also help us to know more clearly how much to give in a particular situation, or whether or not it's appropriate to give at all. Here are some questions to consider. Am I giving beyond what is appropriate, or giving beyond what may be healthy for myself emotionally and or physically? Are my heart, body, and mind relaxed, open, and joyful when I feel I've given just enough? Or do I experience anguish and contraction of the heart, body, and mind in giving too much? This is another aspect of it, is if we give more than we're ready to give, if we give and then later regret it, then that can have unintended consequences, where then we can have resentment toward the person, the recipient, and even hold it over them silently in our mind, if not otherwise. And then this question: am I aware of when the most generous act might be to step back and simply let people take care of themselves, to let go and allow a particular situation to just be and work itself out? Now here we get into the real upper reaches of sensitive giving. Is there are times when we just have to, the best thing is to leave things alone, or the best thing is silence, or just letting things play out as they need to, because we can overdo, we can interfere with that happening. This is another aspect of teaching. When do you know how to know when to be silent and just let the person work through their own stuff, which often is the very best thing and really an act of giving. Another way to put it is, let's not try to help in order to avoid some discomfort in the other person's pain. We don't need to fix everyone's pain. Pain itself can be one of the greatest gifts, because it's primarily through pain that we change. Why do we want to spare everyone pain? Well, of course there are times we want to do that, but there are times when it can be a gift to let people struggle with what they have set into place themselves. This is the real art of human teaching and other interactions, is when to allow, just let. And that old Beatles song, "Let It Be, Let It Be." I think the ultimate giving, though, is giving of ourselves. This has nothing to do with any physical thing. Just letting go. The highest giving is giving up, in particular, and this is very Zen, in particular, is giving up our notions that we grasp at, giving up our ideas, our opinions that we cling to so tenaciously. Giving that up, relinquishing. This is Well, in practice, in sitting, we get practice at this all the time. Every minute, we notice a thought in the mind, thoughts. What do? Well, we practice dana, giving up, letting go. That is really the ultimate way to cultivate giving, is in our sitting. And then, of course, then out in our lives, apart from sitting, to continue that practice. But we have so many opportunities. Second by second, we have the opportunity to exercise that facility of letting go. And also in listening is another wonderful opportunity to practice giving up our ideas and just listening to what the person is saying. Doesn't mean listening for hours, but while the person is talking, to be listening, not trying to come up with what we're going to say next or what we agree with or don't agree with, but just letting it in. That requires relinquishment. Holding to nothing whatever, but dwelling in prajna wisdom. So it's giving our attention. It's what all these having, whether it's sitting or in relation to others, giving our attention is sort of the root kind of giving, the basis of everything else. All right, our time is up. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.